life's more exciting when there's an anticipation and an anxiety. You're more alert and more alive. Like, the worst thing is complacency. Yeah. So get excited that you have fear. Get excited that you have discomfort and say yes.
We are here, another episode of the Between Dreams podcast. Thank you for being here. My name is Chris Ruggiero. I'm the host of the show. We are here to pump you up, inspire you, motivate you to get out and do the things that you are thinking about doing, dreaming about doing, by sharing stories of other people who are doing that. They were dreaming and thinking about stuff. Now they're doing it, and they're sharing their stories of how they made it happen to inspire you to make stuff happen in your life. That's what this show is all about. So thank you for being here. I know everyone has things that they're thinking about doing, dreaming about doing, and you're not doing it because it's hard or because you're thinking about all the problems. And our guest today, Kyle Kesterson, is here to deliver some motivation to jump into things, feeling scared or fear or this unknown. It's scary, but there's a way that you can change your perspective and embrace that feeling to turn it into your favor. Embrace that feeling of unknown or uncertainty or fear and use that to be fuel as excitement of things that can happen. So Kyle is a person who I met at a show here in Los Angeles. He was passing through LA, and I actually met him at Booby Trap, the show that I perform at often in Los Angeles. If you're ever in LA on a Wednesday night, check out the show Booby Trap. Shout out to Scott Neary, who makes that happen every week. And so I started chatting with this guy who was at the show. Turned out to be Kyle Kesterson. And we started chatting, and then I learned that he has an amazing story. So he lives in a most awesome van that you could ever imagine, and he gets to travel around and experience awesome things. And of course, that comes with uncertainty and fear and not knowing what's going to happen. You know, his life is all about embracing the unknown and jumping into things and making things happen. So he's here to share his story about how he lives in a van, but it's not a crappy life. He chose to do this, and it's awesome. So thank you guys for listening. We're going to get into it with Kyle Kesterson to inspire you to embrace fear and unknown and uncertainty to make amazing things happen in your life. As always, leave a comment, rating, review, wherever you're listening to the podcast. You can listen on chrisruggiero.com/podcast, on the podcast app, on your phone, on your iPhone or your Android or whatever. Where else can you listen? Google Play Music. You can listen there. Wherever your favorite podcasts are, we're there, so you can listen. And if you enjoy this, share it with a friend. If you know somebody who will get something out of this message, share it with them. And that's how we're going to grow. That's how we're going to keep making awesome podcasts for you to listen to and keep getting bigger, better guests as we continue to do. So thank you for listening. My name is Chris Ruggiero. This is the Between Dreams podcast. This week's guest is Kyle Kesterson.
Well, I live in a van, as you can tell. You're sitting in it as we're sitting on the side of the beach in Santa Monica, Venice. I've been on the road for the past 3.5 years. It is not something I ever thought that I would have ended up in. Although my teacher told me in my sophomore year of school that by the time I was 20, I'd be flipping burgers in jail or dead. I think if she would have added van in there, would have felt a little bit better about it. I actually dropped out the next day. But life, every single day, is a different adventure. Not just because I'm outside, but mostly because it's full of unknowns, and it's a day that unfolds moment by moment. There's all sorts of repercussions to this lifestyle. You know, there's give and take. You know, I think when you see the projected hashtag van life and the way that people...
As we all do.
As we do, the epic Instagram sunsets and the, you know, beautiful women scattered about and, you know, it's not to say that that doesn't happen, but that's not the life. There are moments in life that are like that, but you know, this lifestyle is certainly full of challenges, right? So space, you know, sometimes I think that the most creativity comes from constraints, which as I got into this space, I thought about in that way as an opportunity, given that in my previous life, I was an illustrator, toy developer, artist doing like booths and working in dozens of materials. And I had a big studio with tons of materials. And as soon as I got into a van, I'm like, where does all my stuff go? But then I kind of flipped that around. I'm like, okay, well, what does creativity out of a van look like? So I just got to refine my tools. I got to change and experiment with new medias and formats. And so I try to, as much as I can, embrace the discomfort and find the opportunity within it, which has been an ongoing, unfolding theme in my day-to-day. You know, just that, you know, where is opportunity lurking?
Yeah.
And it's oftentimes in the places that you don't want to go, at least on the surface.
Right.
You know, I spent a lot of time physically driving. You know, I've done over 75,000 miles in the last 2 years, 2.5 years. Yeah. And when I'm on the road, there are a couple other themes that emerge. You know, I'm driving. Say I'm trying to get to a specific destination. My expectation is I'm going to get there by this time. And all of a sudden, this little path goes right by. I'm like, oh, I wonder where this goes. And I just turn towards curiosity.
Yeah.
You know? And the second that I do that, every single time when I turn into curiosity, first of all, expectation out the window. Like, I have no idea where I'm going, and it's no longer about getting somewhere. And my experience just changes where I feel present. I feel alert. And it really is more like about the journey. And that's exciting. And I'll dig into that, and I'll usually find myself getting into a moment where I'm like, I don't know if I'm going to get out of this all right. Like, I have a flat tire. I'm stuck in the snow. I'm lost in the woods. I'm, you know, something happens where I hear myself say that. And I've gotten to the point now where as soon as I hear myself say that, I get excited. You know, it wasn't always like that. It used to be like, oh God, am I going to be okay? What's going to happen? Yeah. And now it changed to awesome. This is when the adventure starts.
Yeah.
You know? The adventure begins when uncertainty sets in.
There you go. Yeah, we've been talking about this a little bit, about this just change of perspective of what's good and what's bad. And there is no such thing. We're talking about this with Seth in the previous episode of, you can just change your idea of what's good and bad. And sure, there's things like, oh, a flat tire is generally a bad thing. But as you said there, it's like, okay, cool, something could happen out of that. You know, it's like, you never know. Mm-hmm. Now you get hung up and you have to be more present, and you maybe meet somebody new that comes and help you, and that could be a different, you know, that little change in that path for could be completely.
Where life happens.
Yeah.
Yeah. When I find that, so there's a second layer that usually happens. And, you know, once I have that initial experience with discomfort, I light up. First thing I actually do in a very physical way, like, I will start taking really deep breaths while this Audi is doing donuts outside the van. One of the awesome repercussions about being in a van is you're surrounded by weirdos at all times. Anyways, the one of the things that I will... I'll do is I'll start feeding oxygen into my brain. Let's let him get his ego out the way. But no, there's back to the oxygen piece. Like, it's super simple, but that's my quick association to discomfort. It's like, okay, let me just start breathing more.
Yeah.
There's a really great saying that I grasp onto, and it's fear is just excitement without the breath. Because literally, like, when you get scared, you stop breathing. You cut oxygen off to your brain, which means you start releasing cortisol, which means that's a stress hormone. And that's when you start to feel like you're out of control in the world. The scariness gets bigger. So if you breathe more, it just creates more of an alertness and actually makes it more exciting. So I'll start breathing, and then I'll continue stepping into that discomfort. You know, say I'm lost in the woods. Like, I'll keep getting lost in the woods. And yes, I'm uncomfortable about it the whole time, but I'll keep pushing myself and pushing myself until I hit what I call the butthole pucker moment. And this is the moment where there's no more, you know, sometimes it's a fine line between fear and common sense. And in your head, because it's so abstract, like, you don't really know sometimes which one is which. And I try to get to the point where it's screaming common sense, yeah. Where it's like, no, no, no. If you take one more step, you're going to fall off that cliff. You're going to die, you know? And what ends up happening is between that first threshold of discomfort, that space from that point to the butthole pucker moment, like, that's growth. That's the life experience. You know, when I come back from a moment like that, I will do this little post-mortem. I'll recap, like, how did I get into this? What was it like going through it? What could I do to be better prepared in the future to where my experience would be different? How could I be better prepared? And, you know, I showed you my garage in the back of the van. You know, I've got bolt cutters, shovel, axe, machete, like, all of those tools came from moments of discomfort where I was unprepared. So I love those themes, because that's been an ongoing theme where I've noticed the most growth and excitement in my life is when I've turned into my fear. When I first identified, oh, that little whispering thing, that's fear. Ooh, hey, fear, are you my friend? Are you pushing me forward to, like, you know, have me accomplish something? Or are you the type of fear that's preventing me from doing something? If you're that fear, I got to slay ya.
A quick little thing about changing perspective as well that I just thought of when you were saying that off topic of your garage is inside your vehicle.
Yeah, exactly. Rather than my vehicle, like, the garage.
And it's like, you can just, I think it's funny that you call it your garage, as that's like your little, like, workshop right there. And it's literally like a thing panel hanging on the wall. Now, we jumped into a lot of things of really, really deep and heavy things of what you've experienced and learned and what you've forced yourself into these situations. And I think people listening at home might be like, okay, well, yeah, that's easy for you to say. You are this type of person who can do this. And I know that that's not ever true with people, because we see people who are doing something and it looks easy. We see the Instagram version, you know, we see, like you said, the hashtag van life, and it is, you know, completely
hashtag amazing. Authentic. Live authentic is not actually authentic.
Right. So let's go back to the beginning, and you said you had this, you had stuff and workshop and tools and all these things. And there was a decision that you had to make to get rid of that version of what your entire life was and what people think that is normal. Maybe that's kind of going away. Now it's more acceptable to have like this mobile lifestyle, but I know I get it even from what I'm doing, and it's, I feel like what I'm doing isn't even as extreme of a change. So what was that initial thing? The question is, what was that initial thing of how do you go from, quote, normal of what people think is how, you know, is a normal way of existing into something that's what we are doing, what you're doing right here would be, in the grand scale of things, not normal. Most people wouldn't decide to move into a van.
No, that's a great question.
I wish the listeners, we're going to also make, I just made that sound like you're like a crazy person living in a van. I do need to say, there's a YouTube video that we are going to make as soon as this is over, so it will be out right now, with a tour of the van, and we're going to show you guys how awesome this van is. I'm so inspired, and I think it's awesome, because, and we were talking about it before, of it doesn't feel like we're in, like, a van.
Yeah, you know, no, this like is my home. It just happens to have wheels.
Yeah, it feels like we're in, like, a nice apartment. A really small, nice apartment.
It's a Brooklyn-size apartment.
Yeah.
That I could get far away from Brooklyn or the city from.
Yeah, so go back to that. Yeah. How did that initial thing happen? What were some challenges that you, struggles that you, you know, was it a hard decision? Did you just know that that's was going to be?
So I'm gonna hit this from two angles, because the first one was how this accidentally happened. And then I'm going to come back to it with, if I were to do it again, and actually the set of intentionality that would have really shortcut this process.
Yeah.
So the first version was, after my time as a toy developer and doing these art shows and, you know, focusing on the visual arts, I stepped into the world of tech startups and entrepreneurship. And I started a company. It was actually, I got dragged to this event called Startup Weekend. And in Startup Weekend, you're one of three ticket types. You know, you're a creative, an engineer, or a business person slash everybody else and their grandmother. And you show up and you either have an idea that you pitch, you get 60 seconds of pitch, or you hear ideas, and then teams organically form, and then you go from Friday night with the idea to Sunday night with a working prototype of the product, some customer development where you're out talking to people about the product, you do a business pitch. It's just kind of a startup in 54 hours, you know, a little bit of a taste.
Yeah.
And I got addicted. And the very first weekend, I met the person who would become my co-founder. He was a Microsoft engineer. And we started a company around celebrity social gaming. It was, you know, 2010. And before I knew it, I was headfirst into this entirely new world. And it was extremely uncomfortable, but it was also, as a creative person, it was the first time where I felt like nobody could tell me no around my ideas. You know, it felt like creative freedom, and it was an entirely new format to bring art to life and interact with people, making it smart and, you know, writing code behind stuff and all these algorithms. And it was just such a trip. But before I knew it, I was in boardrooms pitching investors for millions of dollars and playing this game that I had no formal training to play. You know, I dropped out of high school my sophomore year. You know, by the time I did go to college, it was on a scholarship because of my art portfolio. I mean, I was an artist. I wasn't a business person. And we could dig into this other part later, but, you know, I grew up homeless with my family bouncing around and went to 14 different schools, and I was the worst kid in the entire school district with the thickest disciplinary file by the time I dropped out. You know, I was the antithesis to what my peers, their path were, that were achieving quote-unquote success. And I felt like an imposter, you know, like a complete fraud, saying, like, you can bet on me, you know, like, you're in the business of mitigating risk. Yeah, whatever. And that's like that first time where I really started to hear that little whispering voice of like, if we only knew the truth, you know. So there was a time at which I felt uncomfortable. I used to never tell people my background of being failure, dropout, homeless, any of that stuff, because I'd been bullied my entire life for it. You know, I had a lot of pain associated to it, and I wanted to create this life that was the opposite. And so I hid from that for a really long time. And I ended up, you know, building up my first company. We raised a bunch of money. We hired people. I hired a CEO who then fired me. And then a week later, I started a new company and raised more money and hired more people and started building more products. And we got to 2014, and the company was starting to run out of money. We were working on this really big deal, and in order to get enough funding to get to that milestone, I had to move. And at the time, my entire life was up in Seattle. I'd spent my entire life up in Seattle, and I had to move my entire life down to Las Vegas, which at first glance was like, hell no, I'm not moving to Las Vegas. Like, there's nothing there for me, you know? But then I realized, I'm like, I'm not ready to fold up the company. I need to do whatever it takes. And so based on me trying to fulfill promises that I had made, and as a problem solver, trying to hit it from all different angles until I know I've exhausted all options, I knew that I still had at least one more crack at bat, you know? So I stumbled into it, and that I did it based on the necessity of needing to keep my company alive was the thing that got me out of my comfort zone, which was my nest, which was Seattle and that community. Mm-hmm. Once I left, I had exited Seattle community. I'm getting ready to enter Las Vegas community. 2 weeks after I got there, the community I was about to enter kind of imploded. People started leaving. There were a couple suicides. There was a huge part of the community that there were all these like firings. Like, it was a really weird time to be trying to join a community, which made me feel like I was in community purgatory. I was like, now I'm just in the desert alone. And so I decided to take a road trip. You know, I'd never really spent any time on the road. And so I took my dog and I got in a Jeep and I hit the road. And that road trip turned into 2 years. Just the more time I spent out on the road, realizing everything that I need are in two little boxes on the top of my Jeep, right? And getting to explore new places and slow down time, like having access to nature away from places that have light pollution, for example, like the sky opens up. You are then viscerally a part of a universe. That will mess with you. You know, that will change your entire perspective around size or time or what ultimately matters or what doesn't. Like, it really shakes you up.
Yeah.
Different than seeing it from a screen, you know, because you're activating all your senses. And the more time I spent myself doing that, I was just changing.
Yeah.
And every time, you know, every 3 or 4 months, I'd swing back down because I'd just gotten a lease on a house. So I had a house the entire 2 years, which basically became a giant expensive closet.
Yeah.
And I'd come back through and I'd swap out seasonal, you know, materials and change my clothes, spend a week or two there, and then back out on the road. And every single time I came back, I felt more of a tug of like, this stuff is anchoring me here, you know? And last summer, this comes back to your other question, which is more of like the intentionality part. Last summer, I went through this simple exercise of asking this question of myself, which is, what do I define as success? Not what is my parents' definition, not what are my friends' definition, what's not the definition of the people I look to that are modeling what I think success looks like. Not this cultural collective definition of success, which we could peel back layers on there. What's mine? And not what is success, meaning it's out there in front of me somewhere, and as soon as I climb this mountain and I open up that box labeled success, what's inside of it waiting for me? I flipped it around. I looked backwards. It was more, when in my life have I been the most inspired, excited, connected, like felt alive? And I started to replay those memories and the themes started to merge. You know, my definitions became having autonomy with my time, having the freedom to express and communicate my ideas and collaborate with people and feed off their creative energy, getting to sit down and have conversations with people outside of these caricaturizations. Like, especially right now in this politically charged, divisive environment, one of the opportunities of being in this van is like, I'm in really rural places a lot of the time, and I get to sit down and share stories and get insights into these lifestyles of people who live outside of this like bias, which is really grounding. And then also just access to nature, you know, where time slows down and your perspective changes. And when I started to see all of these things cleanly in front of me, I'm like, material plays almost no role in any of these things. All right. So I came back and I just started purge. And now being in the van, there's been a couple repercussions. You know, one is every time I turn on that faucet, I'm thinking about, okay, how soon am I going to fill up that tank? How soon do I have to dump that tank and fill the water back up? You know, my devices and how much energy they're pulling off my batteries, you know, having to constantly watch the monitor. Also, with such limited space, every single item I own actually gives me value. It serves a purpose. And if it doesn't, even to this day, I still purge, you know?
Yeah.
And just those three things alone, my day-to-day is, I live a very conscious, grounded experience in my day-to-day in a way that I've never experienced before. Back in regular life, so much of my head was surrounded in this busyness where I'm thinking about the future, or I'm worrying about the, you know, I'm worrying about the future, or I'm, you know, reflecting on the past. Not much of it felt actually grounded in a moment.
Going back, what I think a lot of, I'm trying to do this myself, as you have to get rid of stuff. I realized exactly that. I'm like, I haven't looked at this box for 2 years. If it would just disappear,
you'd be fine.
That would be great.
Yep.
But
as soon as you see it,
I start digging through it, and there's like a thing, who knows what it is.
Find somebody who cares less about it and let them help you. No, I'm serious. I had friends come over, and they would just be like, no, you don't need that. No, you don't need
right.
that. And then it becomes this momentum and this muscle where you kind of let go, and you're like,
that feels good.
After that actually wasn't that bad.
After a
Let's
couple
do that
things,
again.
Yeah. Yeah. I gave away a couple things I was going through just last week. I gave away a couple things. Actually, I had a fog machine, as an example, in my closet that it moved out here from, I moved out here to LA a year and a half ago from Pennsylvania, and I had that. I never used it in Pennsylvania. Sure as heck never used it in LA.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, I'm going to do a show sometime, and I'm going to need a fog machine. Like, I don't even know if it still works anymore. So I called Scott Neary, because he actually does a show every week that he might... I was like, hey, you want a fog machine? He was like, for free? I was like, yeah.
Of course.
He's like, yeah. yeah, of course I do. Of course I want a fog machine. So I was like, that was awesome. I was like, he might not ever use it either, but...
There's the difference of, is this valuable versus, is this valuable to me?
Yeah.
Because, yes, the question or the answer to that question is like, of course this is valuable. It's like $100 or, you know, it is valuable. Is it valuable to me, yes or no? And if it's not, then it's like, okay, who is this valuable to? And that, like, that was, your instinct is right. You know, find somebody that you know would benefit from it. So at least you are also able to give a gift, you know, which is also pretty awesome.
Yeah, that felt better. The just giving it away felt better than me knowing that I had it.
100%.
And there is that. It's, I know everyone is going to connect to this feeling of being connected to your stuff, because that's, again, going back to what normal, you know, that's what we're taught. You success is having a bunch of stuff.
Can I,
for most people's view?
Can I go on a rant?
Sure.
About this? Okay. So I've been thinking a lot about this lately with all the space that I've had. You know, it first started with the question of like, okay, if these are the things that I actually define as success, but I somehow ended up with all this stuff, why did I end up with all this stuff? All right. So here's kind of where my thinking has come around to. First, looking at a human being, fundamental needs. You know, of course you have like the Maslow's hierarchy of needs around, you know, you need food and shelter and safety. And then you work up to like the higher consciousness stuff. That's not what I'm talking about. This one is more, there's six main core needs. And I think actually Tony Robbins talks about this too. But so if you were to break everything down to six core needs that we all have, first of all, we're all going to prioritize these differently. But six main needs are, first, comfort, safety, security, that feeling of control. The second one is the need for uncertainty, newness, that novelty. The third one is significance, to be seen, to be heard, to be validated, okay? Fourth one is that need for love, connection, community, like belonging. These are personality needs. The fifth need is that need to grow, just to grow, because if you're not growing, you're dying. And the last one is the need for contribution and service and to give back. Now, those six core needs, if you were to... Okay, so I'd like to do a lot of like visual metaphor stuff. So I started thinking about if my life is like a cup. When you're first born, you're at the bottom of the cup. You have nothing but space, headroom above you. To fill up that space is to become the fullness of yourself, like your full possibility, you know, your greatest version of yourself. Every time you learn something, you accomplish something, or you contribute something, you're growing into the fullness of you. But there's another form of space that actually opens up. So in your day-to-day moments is an opportunity for something painful to happen, some sort of tragedy, right? And each time we experience that pain or that trauma, there's this little bubble that opens up inside of that liquid or whatever it is that's filling up that cup, right? So it's like you're looking at a soda and you have all these little bubbles in it. All those little bubbles are the spaces where your identity should be. And it's, as a human being, we're very resilient, right? When we can experience pain and, you know, list off the pains, it's like the pain of loss, of abuse, of sexual abuse, of poverty, of bullying, of, right? All of these things that make us feel like physical sensations of pain, but also just like emotional turmoil. As human beings, we're really good about moving forward and continuing on with life. Well, oftentimes we do not heal properly from them and we carry them forward, especially when you're younger and you don't even have that awareness or the tool set to deal with them. So we live ultimately a divided life. These pockets are the spaces that our triggers come from. You know, when somebody says something to you and it causes you to get angry or shut down or feel worthless and depressed, like I could hear that same thing and not get triggered in that same way. And it's when we react to it, it's like, you said this, which makes me angry. And that's not the truth. It's you said this, what actually goes down to when I was 8 years old and I did it, you know, like it goes so much deeper. But oftentimes if it's too traumatic, we actually block it out. We're certainly not holding it in the forefront of our mind, thinking about those moments, right? And so those wounds become the drivers for how we operate. And I'm going to push that metaphor to the side for a second and talk about the other beast of this equation, which is our economy, right? Our economy, think of it as this living organism, creature, and it needs to grow. And it grows by our ability to consume goods and services. As we buy things, it grows. We're not going to be like, hey, little, you know, economy creature, I want you to grow something. Let me buy this for you. Mm-hmm. No, it needs to be good for us. And so this is where marketing and advertising comes in, and they wrap this little narrative layer around a good or service that says, if you consume this thing, it'll meet one of these needs. This will make you feel safer. This will make you feel cooler. This will make you feel, you know, more adventurous. This will make you feel inspired. Like whatever it is, it's selling this idea or this promise. And also wrapped in that layer is, based on what you pull in from the outside world, you can then represent to the outside world how valuable you are. What you drive, what you wear, where you live, all of these things we can pull in from the outside world and be like, hey guys, look how valuable I am. You can take me seriously now. Our sense of identity and our value is reflected based on our consumption. And in parallel, our status, our title, and our class is a form of relative value, right? Mm-hmm. So those are the two main lies. When we think that we buy something, it's like this little shape, and we then go to put it in one of these little holes that we have, and we realize, oh, it didn't actually fulfill me. Now I have this extra thing, you know? Or even look at, and my rant's almost over, but if you even look at, like, in that class hierarchy, you know, at the top of that pyramid, you know, we put celebrity up there, right? Because that's where fame and fortune is. Those are the things that represent value and fulfillment, which is why you oftentimes get a lot of people that once they get to open up that box and they take the thing out and they realize, oh, I'm still a human being. I'm not a demigod. You know, I still have trouble falling asleep. I still reflect on all those like demons that I have. That's because it's a lie, you know? And so pulling it back all around, it's like, what is your definition of success? And I think those moments, I've come to change my relationship with them. I think our greatest opportunity for purpose comes from our deepest places of pain. It's like fear has wrapped itself around that little box that is success, and the only way you get access to it is to turn into it, face that fear, it goes away, and then you actually realize, oh shit, that's my superpower. Yeah. You know? Anyways, that's my rant.
Yeah. Oh, that's good. There's a ton of stuff in there. I was like thinking of specific things in the middle of it, and then it kind of just kept going. So that was good. I want to go back to the a little bit ago, and where you just felt like you wanted to go for a road trip because you weren't sure what to do, so you went for a road trip. Now, I know there's gonna be pretty much everyone's is gonna say, "Well, I want to do that," but there's going to be a big but there. And they're going to say, but I'm not able to because this or because this. Now, how are you able to do that?
Great question. So the most common response that I get is, first of all, is, holy crap, everything you're doing is awesome. I want to do that.
Yeah.
And then my first question is, why don't you?
Yeah.
And the most common response is, I'm too busy.
Yeah.
Or I can't afford it. Or, mm-hmm. you know, I don't have time. Or I don't know who to go with. Or I don't know where to go. You know, it's the unknowns mostly that sort of push away the feasibility of this idea. People overcomplicate things. With busy. I'm at war with busy. I never use the word busy. And it's not that I don't have a lot to do. You know, I'm juggling all sorts of projects all the time. My schedule is action-packed. I'm never busy. And busy, just, you know, getting hung up on the word itself, I think is having... busy is when you are not aligned to your priorities. When you do not have clarity around your North Star and why you're doing what you're doing and you prioritize down from there. All of a sudden, it feels like you don't have space. You become beholden to time. You're in prison to it. And that's a lie. You know, you should be able to quickly assess when something new enters in as an opportunity. You can quickly go, okay, how does this align to life, to making me feel more alive, to moving me forward? If it doesn't, it just hasn't hit that realm where it's important enough to make space for it. And that's ultimately the thing. Like, you can't have time unless you make time. But getting a little more practical to answer your question, pay attention to how you spend your time. You know, how much time do you spend in a day, over a week, over a month with your screen open? How much time do you spend consuming, you know, watching TV, reading articles, you know, on social media? Like, every single moment you do that is time accrued. If you were to bunch it up and be like, well, I spent maybe 6 hours, which this week, which for most people is way less than they actually spend.
Yeah.
Even that 6 hours, what would happen if you took that 6 hours and you got in your car and you hit your gas pedal for three of it one way and three of it another? You could end up in Alabama Hills. You know, you could be in those most epic places and camp for a night and stare up at the, you know, Milky Way. There's a lot that you can do with a little. Yeah. And again, we overcomplicate things. So when I find myself getting stuck, you know, the first thing I try to do is get out of the environment that's making me feel stuck. You know, if I'm feeling like I'm feeling trapped in my own head, I'm lacking ideas, I'm lacking motivation, you know, if I'm lacking motivation is the hardest one, right? Because then you have to find that self-will to get up and go do it. That's usually when it helps to have a buddy who's like, you can just be raw and real with, be like, dude, I'm in one of those modes. And you'd be like, all right, bitch, get up, let's go. Yeah. Like, you know, they take you out and like force you to get out like a good friend does, right? Yeah. And then you thank them for it later. But yeah, just having that, you know, that accountability buddy, I think really goes a long ways.
Yeah.
But also thinking about, there's a lot that you can do if you make sacrifices with other parts of what you're spending your time doing.
Yeah. Yeah, I hear that so much. I, several years ago, eliminated Netflix and television, so I don't have a TV, I don't have Netflix, Hulu, I don't have any streaming services. And it was for exactly that. I was like, I have a decision to watch. And people are like, well, what? because I'm in entertainment, so people are like, whoa, you need to watch stuff to be in, if you were to be a TV person, you need to watch TV shows. And I was like, okay, kind of. But also, I if I have Netflix, I'm going to watch, like, 6 hours today of stuff that I don't really care about. So it was, like, just a decision. I was like, I'm going to eliminate that so that I have to make stuff. And I'm not perfect. I, you know, it's not like I do, don't ever. I love Instagram and YouTube. So I put some time into there. But, yeah, I think some people think that they're, and we were talking about this again in the previous episodes, of people think they're being inspired by watching a TV show or something, but they're kind of just inspired to watch more of that.
100%, man.
It's like you feel pumped up because TV shows are awesome now.
Yep.
And people watch it and they're like, I feel amazing. I'm in so inspired. But then you're like, okay, but to do what? Like, yep. Watch more. Yep. And then you're like, watch more. Like, I need more of this.
You touch on two things that where my mind goes, the first being around, you're in this industry, so why are you not tuning all in to the rest of your industry? And I got that a lot in technology, right? It's like, I should be reading all the articles and using all the apps and all of these things. And I intentionally keep my head in the sand and open up my perspective in other ways, because the more you get this, it becomes homogenized, the thinking, the, you know, the format, it all, if it is shaping you, when you are taking in information from any direction, it's, you're going to reflect it. It's going to be your, mixture, you know, you're going to, that little piece is going to stick and connect to something else and something else and something else. And it's going to come out as you in your own way. But the more that you open yourself up to how other things are being done, you're going to reflect how things are being done. Where we truly respect and praise and validate when people come at it from a completely different perspective. You can't come from a completely different, raw, new perspective if you're completely tainted by how everybody else is doing it, you know?
Yeah.
On the inspiration part, so I think there are three main modes that we shift in between. I call it my momentum triangle, because ultimately what we're trying to do in our lives is to create momentum as an individual, as a human being, or if we're, you know, a part of a company or a product or whatever it is, we want to build momentum and have it become successful. I got obsessed around this idea because I was like, I know what momentum feels like when it's happening, but what is it? Like, how does it actually work? And so the three points of the triangle. So you have consumption of information, creation, and communication. And our culture, for the reasons I talked about earlier, is stuck on consumption, because the more that we consume, the better it does. And two good things come out of consumption. And consumption is like, I mean, we are built with like five senses, six, depending on your beliefs, but five senses where you're taking in information. Like right now you're hearing me talk, you know, people at home are hearing me talk, right? If you're watching something, you're taking it in. Consumption can lead to education or inspiration. In times where you need to learn something, or in times where you need that spark, consume, open up that funnel, start pulling in from all these different angles and let those things swirl around until that moment happens. You're absolutely right in that people are led to believe that, ooh, I'm so inspired again. Ooh, I'm so inspired again, you know,
yeah.
And it's a vicious loop. People need to get better about understanding that inspiration when they get that idea. Switch modes, start creating, start to turn the intangible, make it tangible, become the alchemist. Right. But I think there's even the folly of the creative, you know, where as a creative, we can come up with a grand idea and we close ourselves off into the cave and we just hack and hack and hack and hack and hack mad scientist style. And we put it out in the world and realize nobody cares.
Yeah.
You know, like ultimately, it's not that you made something. You have to create the right thing and target the right audience. And it has to be at the right time. Huh. That's when you build something successful. Right. So there is a mode, there's a relationship between you So when I build a product, for example, I will come up with a grand idea and I'll try to segment, okay, try to put it on a roadmap. How do I achieve the big idea? But let's kill off all these ideas until we get down to what's the minimum viable product? What is the littlest thing that I can build that is going to prove to me, am I on the right track or not? Once I get to that prototype, I'll go out and I'll try to address who I think it's for. I'll put it in front of them and I'll try to get that visceral reaction, you know? And then that feedback loop comes, you know? It's like, how close to the mark was I? Okay, I need to make a little adjustment. Let me go back. Tinker, tinker, tinker. Put it out again. Okay, a little bit closer. Good. Tinker, tinker, tinker. Layer it again. And then you start to layer on top. And when you have this mechanism back and forth between create and consume to learn, you're building and building and building. So say you eventually build the ship. It's ready to go. It's the one that everybody's been waiting for. And you put it up to dock and you say, okay, go launch. And it doesn't go anywhere. This is where you need communication. This is like the wind in the sails. Like as you are speaking about something, you are selling it. You know, you're pushing it out into the world. And you can go too far the other way there. I mean, that's where you get the salesmen and the hype people who build up too much hype to where it's greater than what the thing is. And so people's expectations are too high, and anything that falls beneath the bar of expectation is like, uh-oh. You know? And so ultimately, can you create a relationship between these three modes? Can you be learning while building and having somebody start to build up the anticipation and they all come together in the right way and then boom.
Yeah.
You know? And not one person. I mean, we all switch between these three modes. And some people can be a lot better at all three, or some people can be amazing and experts at one over any of the others. But collaboration, I think, is also a huge component. So when I build teams, I'm like, okay, who is going to take over in the areas that I suck at or at things I just don't want to be doing? You know, who's filling out that triangle? And that's how I build my team around that. But
anyways. Cool. So you kind of touched on some of the things, like you're working on something. What exactly, like as far as what your work is at this moment, do you have any specifics that you want to share about what current projects are?
Yeah, man. I mean, there's a few different things that it's become.
I know people right now are going to be like, okay, but how's he making money?
Yeah, no, I get that question all the time. You live in a van, you travel around, how do you do it? Well, first of all, to answer that, with being in a van, I don't have a mortgage. I don't have a rent. It's on an RV loan. It's $600 a month. You know, it's, you know, plus gas and some propane. But I'm paying a fraction of what I did when I had a house.
Yeah.
So I need less. Because I need less, I need to make less. Because I need to make less, I need to work less. Because I need to work less, I actually have more time. So that actually, that's a huge component of this. But the different irons in the fire that I've got. One is I run a little tech startup. You know, we build the company is called Freak and Genius, and we build storytelling products. You know, we have one product where you step in front of a screen and it looks like a little 2D cartoon, and you walk up to the TV and it's got a little Kinect on it, and the character snaps into your body, and then you perform a skit and you create cartoons in real time. It's performance-based animation. We have a mobile app version of it called Yak It, where you can bring any photo to life as animation using your voice. You speak to animate. We built another product called Campfire, where it creates an immersive audio-visual experience around physical books. So say you're sitting down with your kid and you're reading like Where the Wild Things Are. On the app, you'd have this Netflix-style library. You choose Where the Wild Things Are, but then you put the app to the side. And then you pick up the physical book, and you have this physical moment. So you're reading, like, Max enters into the jungle at night. And all of a sudden, your room turns blues and greens, and you hear crickets, and the monster roars in the corner. We use, like, voice recognition, and it connects to smart bulbs if you have them. But it creates, you know, soundtrack, sound effects, and lighting effects based on physical books that you're reading.
Yeah.
So that's what I've been building. And I'm building a new product right now called Crossing Paths, which one of the huge issues that I've had with being in the van is continuing to build community. And a lot of the times I'll spend some time somewhere, I'll post a photo from it, someone be like, oh my God, you were there, I was there at the same time, how do we miss that opportunity? So this is a super simple app that's going to make sure you never miss an opportunity to cross paths with your buddy. Mm. So that's my startup. I have engineers, Chile, New York, and Seattle, and then, you know, as long as I have access to the internet, we're good. And then I do consulting. So I just did a fair bit of work for a media company here in LA, and that was a lot of fun. So I got to come in and build a product and build a team. And then I do a lot of speaking events and workshops, usually on entrepreneurship, storytelling, van life, and poverty. And then, so that's one, that's two. Yeah, no, consulting startup, and then the events. And then I've been writing a book all year, but that's not really paying anything.
Yeah.
I create a lot of art.
Why don't we tie it all up into a nice package, and what would you leave people with if people want to not necessarily stop the way that they're living and move into a van, but if they're on the edge of something that feels scary or they're full of fear, and they know they want to do it, they can't quite jump over the edge. What's your package to give them to whatever, to do it or to not do it or to think about, or what are your thoughts on that?
Start breathing. First, number one, just get some oxygen in your brain. Then sit down and ask the big question. What is success to you? Right? Define the ultimate goal as clear as you can see it from the perspective, the vantage point that you're at today. Okay, so say now you have your ultimate goal. All right, what are your milestone goals to get there? Okay, what's that first milestone goal? All right, what are the steps to that first milestone goal? All right, what's that first step? That's how it breaks down. And oftentimes, based on where we're at, we don't get the luxury of seeing the whole path. Yeah. That's, I mean, and there's a gift to that, right? Because if you saw the whole thing and all of the challenges ahead, it'd probably be overwhelming and you wouldn't want to do it.
Yeah.
Focus on what's directly in front of you after you work backwards from, like, really dig deep. Ask hard questions. Know what motivates you, right? Align to those. Turn into them. When you start to have clarity, like, all right, this is your first step, do it. Start doing it. Find somebody who's going to help coach you, who is going to demand that you follow up. You know, on Friday, I'm going to have these three things done. So I do check-ins all the time. You know, it's like, this last week I did this. This next week I'm doing this. You know, so you check in the next week. And just having that rhythm and the routine and that that accountability goes a long way. And, you know, don't stop or don't hesitate sometimes to stop, look back, and reflect on how much movement you're actually making, and then celebrate that. You know, celebrate the little things, and for the moments that are discomfort, that you find discomfort in, get excited about that, because eventually you're going to not have discomfort around that thing. Life's more exciting when there's an anticipation and an anxiety. You're more alert and more alive. Like, the worst thing is complacency. Yeah. So get excited that you have fear. Get excited that you have discomfort, and say yes. And the last thing is, my mom used to beat this into my head all the time, 10 seconds of boldness, especially when it comes to, like, moments of being shy, right? Where it's like, oh, I don't know if I want to go talk to that person. Oh, I don't know if I want to get on stage. I don't know if I want to take the leap. 10 seconds. You can do anything for 10 seconds. And you often find the hardest part is just starting.
Yeah. That's great. That, I think there could be a whole lot. I don't want to add more because that's a great ending, but I want to elaborate or reinforce that, you know, that 10 seconds of boldness, it goes back to take that first step. You could see that first step, and then once that momentum starts happening, then that's easy. The hardest part is always going to be the first step, because we're in our mind thinking of all those things that are probably never going to happen. So jump in and make it happen. And that's awesome. So people that want to find out more about you or follow along on your journey, where would you like them to go?
Hit me up on Instagram at Kyle Kesterson. And I do a lot of my storytelling. I share a lot of my experiences. I do a lot of the stories, the behind the scenes. I'll take questions and have conversations and, you know, pretty active on Instagram through this journey. Thanks for having me.
Okay, who's ready to get rid of all their stuff and start living in a van? I'm motivated to do it. It's so inspiring to hear that. I'm pumped up about it. And even if you're not, I hope that message inspired you to get out and do whatever it is that you're thinking. I know most of you aren't going to go live in a van, but I know you are thinking about doing something and you want to do something, but you haven't done it because of whatever reason. So we are here to tell you to get out there, make it happen, embrace the fear, say yes to things, and then amazing things will continue happening. So thank you so much to Kyle for sharing that. Thank you to you for participating. You listened all the way till the end. Congratulations. That means that you enjoyed this, so share it with a friend. Get people pumped up. Let's make this show have a million listeners, or just one more would be great. So thank you. Again, my name is Chris Ruggiero. If you do enjoy this, you can leave a comment, rating, review, whatever on iTunes or probably whatever other app or thing that you're listening to this on. You can listen, you can download it, chrisruggiero.com/podcast. You can download or listen now or listen later, podcast app, Google Play Music, whatever. You know how to listen to podcasts. So you just listen to a podcast, so you probably know how to listen to a podcast. So I don't need to say that anymore of what I just said. So thank you. That's all I need to say. Thank you. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being here. Thank you for helping me connect with crazy, amazing people who have stories that I can't even comprehend. I'm just excited about where the future of this show will go as I continue to meet more and more people. And I'm so thankful that people have been listening and people have been agreeing to be on the show, because we're at like 60-something episodes now, and I ran out of people that I actually know. So the podcast really started with people that I just knew, like my friends who were doing cool stuff. And then, thankfully, I only have a handful of friends, so I had to start reaching out to strangers. And that's scary. Because people can say no, and they do. But that's, again, that's part of this message, is just to get out and make things happen. And I'm so thankful that I get to be in this position where I do amazing things. They're scary and they're full of unknowns, but doing them is always worth it in the end. Sometimes right before it happens, I'm like, I don't want to do it. Nope. I just want to quit doing this. And then after it happens, I'm like, wow, I'm glad I did that. So that's the message. You'll be glad you did it when you have done it. So do it. Put that on a t-shirt. My name is Chris Ruggiero. Thank you for listening to the Between Dreams podcast. Well, I'll see you soon. Thank you and goodbye.